But actually, every day you walk onto the set, it's incredibly stimulating and exciting. Every time you see what the new set is, every time you see a new script, every time you discover who the new guest stars are going to be, every time you get to be Doctor Who, which is what happens to me. I go to work and I've got to try and be Doctor Who. That remains for me immensely exciting.
These are the Target Files, Doctor Who, Season 10 Reviews. Join us now as we discuss the final season of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor and Stephen Moffat as showrunner.
Hello, welcome to Doctor Who Target Files Season 10 Specials. This time we are discussing Episode 10 of Season 10, Eaters of Light, by Ronan Munro, directed by Charles Palmer. Hi, this is Mike in Swansea.
Hello, this is Alex in Exeter.
So, Al, Ronan Munro, returning to the show after Survival nearly 28 years ago, the final Sylve McCoy story of the classic era. What were your overall thoughts, or to give us a teaser of your thoughts on the new story?
Really well written. It had complete Rona's great writing, fantastic plot, good characters, and that's urban wilderness with beautiful music, really. So I thought it really worked. It's just a shame nobody watched it, unfortunately. Joys of the English weather.
Yes, beautiful weekend here in the UK. Really happy to see Rona return. Different enough in the new format from Survival back in 89. Did enjoy, well directed, a lot of excellent themes. Nice to see historical, sort of framed and linked to the present day at the beginning. So yeah, another thoroughly enjoyable one in this excellent series.
Oh, most definitely. And it had some, I just thought it had a really good dialogue between all the different characters, and it sort of had a nice pace. And I think there were little musical and sort of way the alien looked, sort of references to Survival as well, I thought.
Yes, the idea of the crow speaking, it was very similar to the creepiness of the cats we saw in Survival.
Yeah, definitely. And there's just that one bit where I think I would have loved that when that crow said master, him to have morphed into the master. That would have been really, really good. But overall, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, reminder, of course, of Ravens back in Season 9, which were pretty critical to Clara's fate.
Yeah, that's true, actually. And I thought those just sort of things what should be in the background were made really important, like the crows and the music. And the dialogue, though, is absolutely sort of fantastic between Pearl and Peter, and really funny bits with Matt Lucas as well. I thought it just worked really well.
Matt and Pearl took a bit of a backseat this week, but I was happy to see sort of Capaldi more central again. After the last few stories, we've had a bit of a ensemble effort, but you really nailed the Doctor again this time, didn't he, I thought?
Oh, most definitely. There was just that really good level of sometimes being a bit, this is an adventure, to show Bill, about the Romans, and then coming forward to be the most important is what happens at the ending, and having to be persuaded not to do something he wants to do, based at the ending. And it's a really good Doctor story, I thought.
Yeah, the main part of the story, we had a little bit of a setup for next week at the end, but it was framed in the modern day. We had a Scottish Ken, didn't we? Probably filmed somewhere in Wales. You had a young girl going up and hearing the sort of rumoured singing from the actual Ken area itself, from the Picts' hut, didn't you? And that sort of that's a wonderful fantasy story. We all remember those sort of stories from our childhood, don't we, of local sort of events having sort of historical significance, and using your imagination to imagine and hear sort of tales of folklore which have been passed down through the generations.
Oh, well, most definitely. We have it all the way throughout England, I think. And it's that sort of fantastically shot that the whole of this episode was. And those little children just look beautiful. And all that great music in the background. And sort of just made it look a really beautiful wilderness. And I think that's what bits of Survivor I really love, you know, the whole, and so you can see it's in this as well, big surrounding wilderness and just very simple sort of, you know, guitar strings and very simple bits of music will make it look beautiful.
Yeah, Celtic folklore music. Nardo funnily said, didn't he, oh my god, that's worse than jazz.
he's just a little bit of Nardo all the way through this episode. It's just great, and the whole thing about it, it's damp and you're getting Peter going, it's Scotland.
Death by Scotland, that was the other one, wasn't it?
Oh, no. It was a great bit. There's just some great dialogue from all this, and people in, and it's very interesting how, you know, she's comparing Romans, everybody thinks we're a bit backwards, being very 21st century, you know, the whole bit when Bill's trying to explain, is it to the Roman centurion, you know, who quite likes her that she's gay, and it sort of doesn't even surprise them.
Yeah, and there's a whole sort of bisexual theme, isn't there? Because he says you lot are very restricted.
I do like all those bits where he's just right, it's brilliant. I thought the whole episode worked really well.
Sorry, I'm going to bring you up on something. We had a bit of feedback this week on the Twitter. Jeff Waddell, one of our old faithful listeners. We apparently mentioned last week that the picks were English, but he's a very adamant Scot, and he mentioned that they were in fact Scottish.
Okay, we had to apologize. They definitely must be Scottish. I thought they were part of the Boudicca tribes, but I've looked into that and he's definitely right. They are Scottish.
So, well corrected there, Jeff. Please keep listening.
Please do correct us.
Yeah, anybody wants to correct us with our usual bad knowledge at times.
It's all fine because there are bits we do get wrong, so do tweet us and correct us.
Yeah, one of the Celtic tribes, of course. And I did a little bit of research and apparently there is the idea of a Pictish beast. And certainly the CGI design of the monsters within was based upon that. If you look at the sort of Wikipedia article and the various other articles, the various drawings down the years, and they use that sort of drawing motif to show the TARDIS at the beginning when the children were walking up upon the cairn.
Oh, really? That's interesting, because it did look very... I thought it was sort of a mixture between sort of a reptile and a cat, basically. It was a sort of... put me back to Survival, really.
Yeah, when we had that one shot of them all sort of swimming together, I was put in mind of the old BBC Ident with the hippos swimming in a circle. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah, it did look a bit like that. So I thought that, I don't know if you found that shot a bit too bright, because I think that looked beautiful, that shot when the Doctor's in the bit and they show the whole time pool with them all there. That looked beautifully, that did.
Yeah, I find myself having to suspend disbelief with some of the CGI still in Modern Who, because he opened the door to the sort of time corridor, the vortex. Did just look a little bit like the sort of David Tennant era title sequence to me.
it did look a little bit, but it looked, I thought it looked, you know, beautifully, it was obviously beautifully lit with lots of bright lights and that. But I do agree, it did look a bit like the time vortex bit from the trailer, the credits.
Yes, and one or two sort of shots of the crow didn't capture the right sort of light in the way they sort of flew away. I think there were a few CGI crows, but we have to say with the Ronan Munro story, nothing will ever be as bad as that cat in Survival.
Oh, no, nothing is going to beat the end of the 80s cat in Survival.
So, yeah, there was quite a lot of influences and sort of future references to the finale, I think. I've also mentioned The Stones of Blood, a Tom Baker story, sort of based up on a hillside, isn't it, with famous... famous stones within.
We mentioned the idea
of the Pictish beast. Yeah, have a look up on the online, folks. It's a fascinating story to look at. How the people back in those days looked at various myths and legends. What I noticed in terms of what I do know about the finale is the Doctor mentioned how time was moving slower within the portal itself. And I know the finale, spoilers, folks, is set partially on a ship where time does move slowly, so they've obviously dropped that one in there, you know, Stephen.
Yeah, I think I've worked out from that what they've been saying, how John Seaman's Master's going to come back.
Or should we leave that a bit to the end, folks?
We'll leave that to the end. I think because of this whole black hole thing, I think I've worked it out.
So talking about the performances, we mentioned Capaldi and how sort of central the Doctor was once again this time. What did you make of the young girl, Carr? You know, I thought she played a very frightened girl extremely well, the actress.
I thought all these sort of, you know, supplementary characters around the Doctor and Bill Nardo were really good this week. You had really good layers. You had the sort of, you know, young children to begin with, and then you had the sort of, you know, later on, the, you know, the rest of their families, adults on the picks, and then you had, who were very well acted, and then you had the, you know, the Romans on the Turians, who were quite good fun. So I think there was a really good balance of good other actors around, you know, Pearl and Peter being brilliant, basically, and Matt being very funny with his bits.
I mean, it must be quite a difficult skill still for a young actor. I mean, imagine most of these actors were probably around about early 20s, 25, but they were all sort of playing 18, 17, 16-year-olds, and I'm put in mind of something like movies I love, Back to the Future, where I know Michael J. Fox was about 25 and he was playing a 17-year-old, so it must be a fairly sort of particular skill in the way you show your expressions, the way you deliver the lines, but I completely bought that they were all sort of that young teenage age in this terrible situation.
I brought it as well, because you didn't know that. I mean, it's like, you know, somehow actors can do it. You look at things like, you know, another thing like The Railway Children, where all the actresses in that were like in their mid-20s to 30s, where you easily think they're younger. It's just something actors can do somehow. They sort of get into that inner child, and you can think they're sort of half their age.
Yeah, sort of superb supporting cast, as you said, Al. Yeah, Bill and Nardole this week, as you said, Bill probably had the one of the most memorable scenes with a mention about her sexuality to the Roman soldier.
And she also had quite a bit of running scenes, which, you know, is not normally usual for a companion, and all sort of asking questions.
Yeah, and she famously fell down another hole again this week, the second week running.
I know, they seem to want to sort of throw her down holes in this season, and she seems to always be fine.
Yeah, a lot of humour, sort of, even the Doctor himself mentioning about, you know, the picked girl car was talking about all the devastation and the idea of empire, the Romans being cowards, and the Doctor went sort of, for a Monty Python reference, yes, but what about the indoor toilets?
Oh, yeah. There's another one, I'm trying to think, that was another really good joke. There was quite a lot of humour in this, you know, to balance it, and I think it really works. And the whole Nardo stuff, you've got to get grumpy, but I'm the only person who knows what the tea cakes are.
Yeah, very, very funny, wasn't he? You know, he mentioned the Death by Scotland line earlier on. You know, he had a lot of very amusing lines. It's probably hard to recall most of them, Al, isn't it?
There were so many, and the other one where when the Doctor's in the time tunnel, he's got native, and he tells them that terrible story about the whole boat being eaten. It's hilarious.
Yeah, what was the line in that about?
He's travelling into the whole boat, but accidentally choked on the lifeboat.
Yeah, he finishes off like that, and it's the fact that the Doctor's been in there for 2 days, isn't it? So.
And he just thinks it's like a couple of minutes.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, that might come into play with this time dilation ship apparently in the finale, but you know, we're teasing you again, folks. We'll talk about that again in a moment.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, thinking about towards the ending, Al, were you pretty satisfied? I mean, Capaldi was quite mesmeric again in terms of sacrificing himself. We almost had that little feeling. Did you have the feeling that he might regenerate now?
I think it's brilliant. I felt the ending was good, but I don't know if I want. I think it was good because the bits were, you know, at the end were good as well, but I think his character knows that he's going to regenerate soon, and you really hope it's going to happen soon. I don't think we're going to get it to Christmas.
No, there have been whispers that very soon we're going to find out who the next actress or actor is to play the Doctor, so that'll be very exciting.
That would be good, and it's, you know, there's so much going on Doctor Who wise at my ways. It's just, it would be really good, but it just to see, you know, at the end of the last episode, who it might be.
Yeah, were you at all concerned, I'm not sure if it's controversial, that Bill pushed the Doctor out of the way towards the ending when he was looking to sacrifice himself? She shot him a few weeks ago. Are you sort of worried about this coming into the companion role at the moment, this violence?
It seems to be getting a bit more violent, the companion does, you know, whereas, you know, the way Bill is. Well, I think that's just the way her companion is, and we've had it before, you know, violence being part of companions, like with Ace wanting to blow everything up. But I think it is more sort of gung-ho with Bill's characters. He seems to think maybe that's the answer sometimes, because he knows the Doctor will just do what he wants to do, so it's the only answer, which it never is. That's the Doctor's angle, it never is. But I don't know, it seems to be part of this character's makeup, you know, for the character. I don't know, I think it works.
Yes, it definitely has served the story in both occasions.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, because you got Nardo sort of stopping him as well in that scene. So I think it sort of semi-worked.
Great camaraderie within the ending, tinged with a bit of sadness. Spoilers, folks, if you haven't seen it, that these soldiers are there to be trapped. I mean, I was put in mind of Rory guarding Amy as a Roman soldier for so long.
Yeah, it was a bit, you know, like those sort of last scenes with, you know, sorry about the spoiler, but when the brother, the one who goes through, is really upset, I thought were really quite upsetting, you know, and that's Crows, where those beautiful noises, and I thought it was beautifully shot. As the doctor says, he hates people being brave because, you know, he just knows they're going to sacrifice themselves.
I mean, talking about the practicalities of it, can they step out of the light again to eat? Or does time sort of slow down enough that they don't need to digest again and they don't need to keep surviving the traditional human way?
Technically, we don't know. Probably not. They probably just get suspended, though, because time's going backwards, so, or it's going forward, depending on where that works. They probably don't.
Yes, I believe it might be worth reading up on time dilation if you can, faithful listeners, before the finale. I think Moffat has actually said it was an idea that his teenage son put ahead of him, which helped him to write this finale, so that should be very interesting.
His teenage son, who's a bit older now, has admitted some of the maps might be wrong. He did.
Well, it usually is. If you get very pedantic about sci-fi, there's usually a great suspension of disbelief, isn't there? So we're talking about a show where the main ship is in another dimension, you know, it's bigger on the inside than the outside, so all bets are off, folks.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Alex, and this is Hughes News on the 18th of June. Well, first thing we need to mention is that if you're a lucky winner of a ticket, there is a special Doctor Who countdown to the starting of the finale episode. It's going to be at the Millennium Centre in Cardiff on the 24th of June. Also in Cardiff, David Bradley has been spotted, maybe reprising his first Doctor character, as they are starting to film the Doctor Who Christmas special there at the moment. This, of course, will be Peter Capaldi and Stephen Moffat's final episode. So we are expecting either a regeneration in this episode or something related to the William Hartnell First Doctor. Also at BigFinish.com, major news this week was launched that they are bringing out a War Master box set. Going to be four brand new stories with Sir Derek Jacobi as the Master before Utopia happened and he changed into John Sims. Also contain Nick Briggs as the Daleks, and it's meant to be sent between the Time War, so it should be fantastic, out in December. Well, the overnight ratings for Doctor Who Eaters of Light, which was a great episode, have been done, and they were only 2.88 million, which is the lowest Doctor Who has ever got, which is a real shame, as the episode was absolutely excellent and should have got more watchers. Hopefully it will on catch-up.
On to the very ending of the episode, Al. A nice setup for the finale. Boy, this series is going very, very fast this time. What did you make of the reintroduction of Missy and the trailer for next time?
Well, it's a really interesting one because we still don't know what she's up to. She's still pretending to be nice Missy and happy Missy and helping Peter's doctor. And, well, it's a weird one because next week we're obviously going to get this thing where the Doctor stupidly sends her on a, you know, in our own little adventure, and we end up on a spaceship full of Mondasian Cybermen. So something's going to go very up the creek, basically. And there's this whole thing about black holes. I'm going to say this is my whole opinion on how we get from John Sims' Master. Because, you know, with theory of black holes is that they can time and it goes backwards. And there's this whole theory that the Doctor's going to lose something very important to us. I think something's going to go majorly wrong with the Cybermen and Missy will throw herself into the black hole, which will put time backwards, which will regenerate her into John Sims. That's my opinion. It might be completely wrong, but there you go.
Interesting. It might be something, some sort of sacrifice like that. My theory, Al, if it's worth anything, it could be totally wrong. I'm looking at the trailer and I'm wondering, why the Doctor would trust Missy to go off with Bill and Nardole. So I think he's somehow got into the Gallifreyan Matrix and set it up as a simulation without her knowing. I think part of the way through she'll find out, and there'll be some sort of wibbly-wobbly way that this whole time dilation bleeds into reality, and that way we'll end up with John Sim. And I think probably by the end of episode 12, we may see Missy return to evil, because Michelle Gomez has said she does something very evil in this series. But I think we may again get a bit of redemption, and I think there might be a bit of a paradox caused where she has to sacrifice herself, or she herself has to kill the John Sim Master to ensure her own regeneration, her own birth of her incarnation.
That's better than mine, because I think mine is a typical Stephen Moffat too obvious answer. It's just, one I've suggested I don't want to happen because it's so obvious. It's sort of, you know, that's typical Stephen Moffat. I think that would be a better, what, you know, he's using the Munt simulation to make Missy think it's all real and it isn't, and somehow we end up back on Gallifrey would be good as well. And a nice big sort of Gallifrey scene would be lovely. What, we don't know, we just don't know anything. And I think we definitely know what John Sims is as the Master is back in this episode, because he's on the end of the trailer, so you actually see him.
How do you feel about the decision to announce that John Sim was in it? You know, did they really need to put him in that beginning of season trailer? Were they so worried about it being leaked? Because apparently there had been filming location done with Bill and somebody dressed as a tramp on the streets of Cardiff back in January, and no one had actually guessed that was John Sim, but apparently that has sort of now been semi-confirmed that it was. So did they really need to do that? You know, the fact he's not going to appear till episode 10, you know, the end of season 1, I guess, you know, some people have theorised the series wasn't getting enough publicity, so perhaps the BBC higher-ups wanted Moffat to show a big bit of news for it, so that's why they included John in the trailer, and that's why it got out there.
I personally, like you, wish they hadn't said a thing. I wish they hadn't said a thing, and they hadn't put him at the end of the trailer, you know, for the whole season, at the end of the pilot. I personally would have just loved it that you got to episode 11, and whatever's going to happened, and he turned into John Sim. That would have been much more of a wow factor for me personally. And as you've seen, this whole theory that, oh, people these days will put it straight on social media, or, you know, put it out on Twitter. It was in Cardiff filming for 3 weeks, you know, on central Cardiff, and nobody said a word.
Yeah.
So I think they should have just kept it complete secret to episode 12. And I really got a bit annoyed. I have to admit, I wish he wasn't in the trailer this week, personally.
Yeah, and the other thing is, actress called Samantha Spiro, who was...
Oh, yeah, she's mentioned, isn't she? She hasn't appeared yet, has she?
No, and you know, she was on the Saturday Kitchen Show, sort of an early morning cookery show, weekend cookery show here in the UK. And one of the presenters offhandedly said, oh, you're the next Doctor Who, aren't you? And she said, oh, yes, I am, jokingly. But she is down to be in the series, but she hasn't appeared yet. People have referenced her similarity to Carol Ann Ford. You know, could Susan be making an appearance? And I'm wondering if John Sim was put out there to throw us off the scent of another big returning character. You know, that would be excellent if they did keep something.
That would be fantastic if we're just being sent down a normal Moffat garden path with one thing, and there's an even bigger thing.
But if you think about the biggest things in Moffat's reign, that's probably was Tom appearing as the curator, and he couldn't help it, but, you know, Tom had gone, I think, in the few days before the anniversary and been interviewed and said, oh, I'm going to be in the 50th, but he also said, oh, I might just be in archive footage, you know, so he did sort of leave it as a bit of a tease.
It's great because everybody wanted Tom to be in that, and he just basically went, no, I'm not. He started saying, for about a few minutes, he went, oh, yeah, I am, and then he started denying it because he knew he'd been, you know, the way he played it was really good.
Yeah, absolutely, and he did sort of tease us that it would just be archive footage, and then it was such a thrill to see him back in person. But, you know, I would be a bit worried if Susan was returning as a younger actress, why we wouldn't see Carol Ann Ford. I hope we'd sort of see a regeneration if it was to be confirmed that she was ever a Time Lord. I'm not sure about the canon of that, whether Susan is a Time Lord or not. Let us know your theories, folks, at DW Target Files on Twitter.
Well, I believe she is, because Big Finish has sort of done stuff with her and mentioned that she is a Time Lord, where the son of hers isn't. I think that's with the Paul McGann era, that is.
Yeah, but I like to think, you know, with the time dilation, will we see whatever finishes Peter off In episode 12, will we have a little sort of... people have suggested it may be a Christmas-themed It's a Wonderful Life, where we see what life would be like without the Doctor, and perhaps David Bradley, as the first Doctor, will be sort of a spirit guide before his regeneration.
That would be rather cool if they did do that, because I don't know about you, but do you like the Doctor Who things to be a bit more Christmassy than they have been in the last year or two?
I think so. I'm generally not a big fan of the Christmas specials. There's probably three or four I really enjoyed out of, I think we've had 10 or 11 now. And
we have had a few, but I think the ones I actually like do have more than 5 minutes of Christmas and then straight into monsters feel like we've had in the last couple of years.
Yeah, you know what? I've always thought that Christmas, outside the sort of anniversary specials, Christmas would be a great time to have multi-Doctor stories, you know, even if it was just Paul McGann for an hour getting another shot on TV with the current incarnation, because think what that would do for the hype and the ratings. You always tend to get good ratings for the Christmas stories, but that would add another dimension if we saw somebody like McGann or, you know, pray all the time Eccleston coming back just for one more hour on Christmas Day.
I don't know, because I keep getting different opinions on the whole this year's Christmas episode. It's either going to be, like you said, very, very light and Christmassy, or seriously super dark.
Yes, and moving on even further now, Al, did you see the interview with Chris Chibnall this week where he said he's actually gone to the BBC and mentioned that he wants to really shake up the format in some way, and he actually thought when he went in with those plans the BBC would say that might be going too far, but apparently whatever it is, they said no, that's quite okay. So a lot of intrigue there about what he's going to bring to us.
Yes, I did read that article you put out this week, him having a completely free hand, so he can do what he likes. But as we've all known, he can't obviously go too far, because they won't do a female Doctor.
Or will they? We don't know 100% yet, do we? No, that's the main thing.
We don't know 100%, but it's just the way the head tops of the BBC feel, I think, unfortunately.
Anyhow, folks, the Eaters of Light Owl. Shall we go back to that and give our overall scores?
Let's go back to our actual final thoughts on it, because we have sort of gone off on a slight tangent there.
Yeah, your overall score for Rona Munro's return to the series, Al.
Well, I thought it was an absolutely excellent episode. It had really nice pace. It had good characterisation. It had fantastic writing, great dialogue. So, I don't know, I've been trying to put my finger on 9, because it's another one like the Mark Gatiss episode where technically I should give it a 10, but is that being too kind again? I'll say a 9.5, I think.
I suppose it wasn't really a romp like The Empress of Mars, but did generally enjoy it. I was going to hover around about a 9, Al, I think. But I might sort of push it up to a 9.5 like you, not really much sort of wrong with this episode at all, really. You know, we haven't really mentioned the direction. Jeffrey Palmer's son, Charles, again. It was just pretty solid, nothing too spectacular, I think. You know, I've probably already been down as saying Wayne Yip's my favourite director already this series, and we have Rachel Talalay back for the finale. But I certainly think Charles Palmer brings a lot of energy to his cinematography, to his shots. You know, the editing's always very good. Once again, as you said, the music wasn't overbearing, but it was nice to hear something a bit different from Murray again after we've had a lot of stuff reused this season. So, yeah, good performances. Good story. Very satisfying, uplifting ending. Really, the idea of camaraderie, sort of saving the day and putting any differences aside. So I'm going to say, yeah, I'll match you, Al, 9.5.
Well, that's good. I did notice, though, with the trailer, did you see what Murray was using his old Cyberman music? So I hope he's done some new stuff for next week.
Yeah, some pretty thrilling to hear Peter say, wasn't it? Mondasian Cyberman.
Oh, God, that was good. That was good. They do look scary. I think they look scarier than the new ones.
So I think both on the screen and off the screen, with the news likely of a new Doctor, folks, I think a massive couple of weeks for Doctor Who now. Absolutely huge. Probably the biggest weeks we've had since the 50th.
I think so. The next 2 weeks are going to be big, big and busy, I think.
If you happen to recognise our voices, if we're lucky enough to get tickets for the celebration next Saturday in Cardiff for the countdown finale with an orchestra accompanying the episode, come and say hello. Or if you recognise us from the photos.
Definitely. We might be there. That will be a great evening, whoever gets tickets.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files Season 10 Specials, we'll be discussing Episode 11, World Enough and Time, written by Stephen Moffat and directed by Rachel Talalay. Tweet us at DWTargetFiles, all lowercase handle on Twitter, or search Facebook for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast. Thanks for listening. Doctor Who Target Files, Eaters of Light review, featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. I Am the Doctor, originally composed by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by Vale Mystery. Please check out their YouTube channel, VAYLE Mystery. Newsround opening and closing themes, composed originally by Ted Heath and his orchestra and by John Baker. Doctor Who Target Files, Season 10 Specials, Eaters of Light review was recorded in Exeter, Devon, England and Swansea, Wales, UK during June 2017.